Welcome to the Untangling Web3 podcast. Today, we're diving into Mark Zuckerberg's Meta ambitions. The metaverse may have looked dead to many, but with billions pouring into AI, smart glasses, and AR, Meta's vision might just be evolving rather than disappearing. I was at Meta Connect a couple of weeks ago, so let's break down what was announced and what it really means for the future of the metaverse. How are you doing, Jack? You excited for this one?
Yeah, I am excited to hear about your experience there, first and foremost. It's very, very cool that you're actually at the event. And also, I haven't bothered to do my research on some of the things that were announced because, you know, where better to get it from than the horse's mouth itself, right? Someone who's actually at the event. But yeah, the one that's kind of that did catch my eye was obviously the Ray-Ban smart glasses, right? Because we did an episode on what they call Orion this time last year, something like that, 9 months, 12 months ago. Probably the same event last year. And yeah, I think there's some interesting developments. I've also been really flip-flopping in the last few days on my kind of feeling about, you know, how likely these are to take off, whether or not I'd wear them. So yeah, I'm excited to get into all the nitty-gritty on it.
Yeah, so let's jump into it. I mean, first of all, it's called Meta Connect, the event. It is Meta's annual flagship event. There was a lot of hype and focus around this one. Everyone was looking at what's going to be announced. Obviously, the big change for Meta in the past couple of years has been the pivot and push towards hardware. When we did our whole kind of deep dive into Mark Zuckerberg and the metaverse, we kind of said that they obviously started off as Facebook and have been acquiring lots of different social networks. And one of the things that I think was haunting Meta and Mark Zuckerberg was the idea of being beholden to the infrastructure, to the hardware. We said that they had a lot of problems, Meta, in the early days when they were building out, you know, the end user apps on Apple, because Apple takes a big margin, they weren't sharing data, and that really screwed their kind of business model for a long time. So with that in mind, like, they've been buying people like Oculus, been working more and more with smart glasses, just to try and pivot to make sure they're part of the conversation when it comes to hardware and maybe defining what the hardware of the future looks like, what wearables look like, and importantly, are not beholden to a Samsung or iPhone. And that's really been, I think, one of their big plays in the past couple of years and was definitely a focal point for this event.
Yeah, it's really interesting, especially that you mentioned Apple there, because in my mind, Meta has kind of had a soft pivot within a pivot in the last couple of years in the doubling down on AI so much, right? Because, you know, if you just do the straight comparison between, you know, Meta and Apple now, they're both companies that are building their own hardware from the ground up. They're also trying to build their own AI. And actually, ironically, that's the area where Apple has been lagging behind. Kind of everyone is citing them as the laggards in the AI industry right now. They had their, you know, annual flagship event, you know, drop of all the new iPhones the same week as the Meta Connect event. And there was really no mention of deep kind of Apple intelligence features, you know, their AI engine. And people are kind of thinking, well, maybe they're going to be, you know, doing stuff in the background. But the impression is that they can't keep up. Whereas Meta, on the other hand, have been making quite good advances in AI. So now you've got that question of who's going to master. You know, obviously Meta are only competing on some fronts here, like with the kind of smart glasses, AR, VR stuff, and Apple have, you know, hardware competition in so many other domains, and Meta are just focusing on a few. But it's going to be interesting who kind of nails the integration of their best LLM and AI systems with the hardware. And I think, you know, the argument could be made that for the wearables, like the kind of vision-based stuff, that Meta has maybe taken a little bit of a step ahead here.
Yeah, I mean, you see the numbers flying around and it's absolutely bonkers. Like, Meta's investing hundreds of billions in infrastructure. They've been like paying salaries of hundreds of millions, if not billions, to acquire this new special AI team that they've been poaching from other places like Google, Gemini, all this kind of stuff. I think the really interesting thing, and we'll come to it a bit later, is their pitch towards AI is slightly different to other companies. And I actually really fundamentally agree with it. One is the open source pitch. Like, they were one of the first companies to really push the idea of their model Llama being open source, which I love. I think it's quite powerful. The other thing is this idea of contextual AI. And the TLDR of contextual AI is, rather than just building more powerful and powerful models, you know, pouring money into things for micro improvements like many companies are doing, it's the idea of the AI is good enough, could be better, will be better in the future, but good enough now. What is missing is context, understanding what a human is doing and being able to assist the human. The window has changed from the LLM prompt. I put in some information, I get a request, to agents that scour the internet, know more about me, can do more things. What they pitch as their vision for AI is something that is plugged into your wearable, plugged into your smart glasses, sees what you're doing 24/7, quite scary in some ways, but has the context to be able to aid you in ways that you don't even know are possible right now. And I think that's a really powerful pitch, but maybe we'll talk a bit about that later.
Yeah, I think you're right. That is interesting, kind of a different flavor on the AI, I don't want to say model, approach that they're using. Because again, this is kind of coming back to the, you know, garbage in, garbage out, right? Doesn't matter how good the model is. It's about the stuff you're putting into it and whether that stuff is now evolving from, as you say, prompts to the context of, you know, what you can see in front of you potentially. But also, I'd imagine, again, I don't know the details on this, but I'd imagine that Facebook is going to be, or Meta is going to be using to all their advantages, the rich data they have on you as a user, right? Because, you know, famously, they collect a lot of data about us. You know, we've had a Black Mirror episode kind of playing on the fact that Meta probably knows more about you than like the police, for example, right? So that's the kind of, I think that's the kind of interesting intersection there as well, is that they going down this contextual AI route means they probably can leverage all that rich kind of social interaction data they potentially have in the back. Whereas again, that's somewhere where an Apple might struggle, especially since they implemented all their kind of additional privacy features over the last few years too.
Definitely. Even like a ChatGPT, like same thing, like ChatGPT just knows right now what you prompt into it, and that might change in the future. But I think it's a smart play when you have all these companies that are burning money trying to get bigger infrastructure, more compute, smarter models, and it's getting super competitive, and that maybe the improvements are starting to, well, the rate of improvement is starting to decrease for the amount of money being invested. They are focusing on their USP, which is the data they have on users, like the rich, rich, close to the user data and context. And I think it's a smart play. So that's one of the core themes, is the idea of this kind of contextual AI, which I think is quite powerful. The other core theme was around breaking phone addiction. Like we said before, they don't want to be dependent on the smartphone industry and like the kind of the gatekeepers of smartphones, Samsung's, Apple, all this kind of stuff. So they're pitching, rather than trying to compete in that hugely saturated market and very established expensive market, what do the smart devices of the future look like? They're betting heavy on smart glasses, both normal smart glasses with cameras and live assistants, and HoloLenses, this AR VR kind of push. And then the final one is infra, like infra before apps, building, allowing people, giving people the ecosystem, the tools to build incredible apps, both hardware and software. And we'll talk about all these things a bit later. But yeah, it was a really interesting conference. One of the things I want to say is that I thought it'd be loads of techies, like there'd be everyone be wearing glasses. Mm. Everyone was wearing smart glasses, Meta smart glasses, actually, absolutely everyone. Okay. But it was a lot more showy. Lots of marketing people, loads of KOLs, lots of shiny outfits and like, you know, kind of wings on trainers and all this kind of stuff. And I thought it'd be like a room full of nerds, but it really wasn't.
I mean, you say room full of nerds. You can't use something like KOL and not call yourself a nerd. I think that's that's
one of kind of the different type of the different type. I think the marketing nerd. Kind of the marketing nerd. Like you kind of yeah exactly that. Like I think there was a lot of game developers as well. That was the big thing. Like the two there were two types of people there, and I don't fit into either. It was the KOLs that are wearing flashy outfits, recording everything, very attractive, that kind of stuff. And then the game developers, loads of game developers. And that really surprised me. I didn't understand why, but I'll talk a bit about that later as to why that is. And it relates to the infrastructure and the software they're building.
Okay, yeah, interesting. I mean, I guess there's also been this general, let's say, vibe shift with Zuckerberg and Meta in the last couple of years, you know, right? Because when he first demoed the, you know, Horizon Worlds, it was meme to hell, right? Because, you know, he was seen as being a little bit dweeby, let's say, and monotone. You know, not that I can talk, but obviously in the last few years he's had somewhat of a glow up. He's a bit more kind of cool on the stage. And to be fair, like the main, I didn't even realize that there was this Meta Connect event happening. I don't follow Meta too closely in the tech circles. I followed the Apple ones, but not the Meta ones. And then I saw all the videos going around about the demos failing, and I think that was the interesting thing, because actually there were a bunch of demos that seemed to fail on the day for various reasons. And the way they kind of handled it was fairly smooth, I thought. I thought, you know, they kind of played it off fairly casually in a kind of, you know, much more coolly than you might have expected a few years ago, which I think also just kind of signifies this shift, you know, to make a more serious point from them being super focused on the hardware and less on, you know, just kind of the old image they used to have, right? They're like, look, we don't mind teething problems. We're a proper hardware company. We accept hardware. Things are going to go wrong sometimes. So yeah, but that is, you know, what was your sense from the actual keynotes when you were there? What was the vibe in the room for that one?
I think it's one of those things. It's always very brave doing live demos, and 3 of the 4 live demos failed, like completely and utterly. It was a tiny bit awkward, but I think the type of person watching that is always going to be pro. And like, you saw it completely split all the people online. Half the people were like, wow, this is a real showcase that they're production ready because they're willing to take risks like this. And yeah, it failed, but you know, most companies just do a pre-recorded demo and it means nothing. And I agree with that. I think if you're at the stage where you feel comfortable enough, even if it fails, to do a live demo, you're ready. That is production ready. That's going to market ASAP. And almost everything they demoed, even the really crazy stuff like the AR glasses, are going to be sold in the next couple of months. So they are at the stage where it's ready for production. But on the other hand, didn't get to see a lot of the tech actually being demonstrated because the live demos didn't work, which I thought was really funny. It was cool. There was like, it was a big showstopper, lots of money spent, lots of people, lots of food, lots of drinks, all that kind of stuff. Classic kind of big tech event. And you are right. The audience fit like the same kind of transition that Mark Zuckerberg has made from absolute dweeb to MMA fighter, lots of gold, mega Chad. Yeah, but it was cool. The event overall, I found quite interesting.
Cool. Well, I think there was one other thing you mentioned earlier I want to pick up on, but maybe we'll leave it to the end, this idea of the kind of smartphone addiction, because I think that is something that, and you know, how we break that is a topic that will pervade kind of all 3 of the announcements. And I think maybe at the end, I want to kind of give you my advice, maybe slightly cynical take on it. But for now, should we just go through what were the big announcements? What were the main kind of, you know, pieces of hardware and review those?
Let's do it.
Before we get into kind of the bigger picture stuff?
Yeah. So the first one was the smart glasses. So these have been around for, I think, a year or two now. I think they were launched end of 2023. So most people will know about these, the Meta smart glasses. It's in collaboration with Ray-Ban. So they're quite stylish, like maybe just thicker versions of glasses like mine. They have 2 cameras. And importantly, they have an AI assistant in there. So you can say things like, hey, Meta. And then it will give you some options like Siri-based, you know, reply responses. It's really funny during the demos. When they said, hey, Meta, as part of the videos, loads of people's Meta Ray-Bans went off, and which apparently was one of the reasons why the first demo failed, because they kind of had this denial of service attack because they had 10,000, you know, kind of glasses all trying to access the same server, which is ridiculous.
So they got demo working in the back door, right? So they managed to demo that the old ones at least can respond to voice commands. Yeah.
Exactly. So the smart glasses, this wasn't revolutionary. Like, I was kind of a bit disappointed by this one. It was just an improvement. Like, those smart glasses have been incredibly popular. I think 2 million units have been sold, which in the orders of magnitude of smartphones is nothing. But for something that was released a year and a half ago, that's kind of like revolutionary tech, it's quite impressive. They're predicting next year they'll be selling 10 million units a year, something like this. So it's growing quite quickly, the demand for this. But the announced improvements based on that first model were just battery improvements, a few cool new smart features like more intelligent digital assistants. So one of the things they talked about was you can have this conversation focus where it's like it will recognize the person you're speaking to in, say, a crowded place, and it will emphasize what they're saying in your ear. It's like a focus mode. So when they're talking to you, there's lots of background noise, it filters out the background noise, and the little speaker on your near your ear will just highlight what they're saying, emphasize what they're saying. Kind of cool, not like absolutely revolutionary, but quite cool. The other thing that they were kind of demoing at this stage, I'm not sure how ready this was the live AI mode, where you could, like, it could listen into a conversation and basically try and work out tasks and take them offline. So me and you have a conversation, it could potentially transcribe it, work out tasks, send tasks afterwards, know that Jack wants to book a meeting 3 p.m. tomorrow or something like that, and kind of do all that offline. But apart from that, the hardware hasn't changed that much, slightly better battery. They made this big deal about it's now slow-mo and can do 3K. And I'm like, okay, guys, you shouldn't be so proud of that. That's been happening in smartphones for about 10, 20 years now. But yeah, a couple of new cool features. Most of this one was around like fashion. It was just new brands, new colors, new styles, which I was absolutely like, didn't interest me at all. The KOLs were going crazy, but I didn't care about this stuff. So that is the first big one. And kind of the thing you mentioned here is, like, it's really, I find it quite hypocritical. Like, Facebook is all about addiction, engagement, getting people stuck on their phones. And the pitch here was, you know, we've gone too far, even though that's their primary business model. We've gone too far, and now we want to enable a world in which people are more engaged in their day-to-day. These things don't distract, they don't take away, they kind of just sit on top and enable. I like the pitch. Do I believe that they're doing it for, you know, purely positive for humanity reasons? Maybe not, but to me, it makes sense. Today's episode is sponsored by the VeChain Foundation.
Now, we often talk about how emerging technologies like blockchain have the potential to revolutionize sustainability. And VeChain is at the forefront of this green movement with initiatives like VBetterDAO. Let's take a closer look.
Imagine tracking small actions like recycling at low cost, making them valuable assets. These verified records build a massive collective impact, benefiting people through their own actions. Sound a bit complex, but VeChain made it fun. Explore our apps at VBetter.com.
VeChain's goal is to power a new era of sustainable solutions. So if you've got an app idea or just want to earn rewards for small, sustainable actions every day, go check out VBetterDAO.com to find out more. And now, back to the show.
Yeah, I think one immediate comment for me is I think Meta need to be maybe a bit better with how they're distinguishing their product lineup, because I think, as you know, someone who's not following closely, it's actually hard to track which of their releases are which, and you know what capabilities they have, right? Because it would be easy to think that the kind of Ray-Ban smart glasses have the same capabilities as the kind of second big announcement we'll talk about in a moment. But yeah, I think for me, yeah, this is, if I'm right in thinking, this is essentially just having an interface to the kind of AI capabilities, right? It's like there's no additional display on the glasses, as you said. It's just a way of interfacing with it, you know, verbally getting, using that context. And also I think like they can still record, footage, right? Which I think is a use case. Mm. It's an interesting one. Yeah. Potentially with some big issues, but I mean, A lot of people just spend their lives recording everything in public now anyway. So I don't know how different it is apart from removing the smartphone, which is, you know, as you said, the stated goal. So yeah, these ones definitely weren't so interesting to me, but you know, I think, it makes sense that they're having natural product updates. Again, this is showing Meta becoming into that cadence of a hardware manufacturer, right? Doing the annual releases, updates, incremental, a la an Apple or a Samsung or something. So yeah, at least it shows they're taking it seriously.
I agree with you. This isn't revolutionary in the sense it's a camera with a bit of Siri put on top. I think it could be. I think once people, and you start to get the numbers and adoption and the hardware improvements, like this could really be the enabler of AI first hardware. Right now, we're still text-based, which is very not convenient, not human in a lot of ways, like not intuitive. I really think that not now, but in 5 to 10 years, it really could get to a stage where we find screens weird. Like the idea of typing manually to multiple people no longer makes sense. And we are just completely interacting with voice audio back and forth, like open this app, tell me what happened, reply to this message. It's a risky pitch. Like it's definitely like against the grain, but I kind of see there is a future in it. Voice first, hands free. And the big thing here is when we get to a stage where they can constantly stream data, you can have a UX where it just kind of sits beside. Like you don't need to understand the onboard and you don't need to understand the possibilities. It just sits there, understands what's going on and can help you when you need help. Or you look lost, or do you need help with this recipe? Like, again, far off, but this is kind of the first steps towards that, which I do find quite exciting.
Yeah, I think it probably says a lot that 12, 13, 14 year old me would have been absolutely all over these, right? So make of that what you will. It's the kind of thing, it's the kind of gadget you absolutely want as a teenager.
Spy gadget. Yeah.
Exactly. It kind of, you know, can do some cool things like the hidden functionalities. But yeah, does that mean it's gonna take off? I don't know. Let's see. But yeah, I think let's move on to what is more interesting from a kind of technological point of view, and that's the AR glasses. I don't know what to call them. So you're the expert, Alec. What do we actually call these ones?
I think we call them AR glasses. I think they're called I think they were called HoloLenses or something like this. But okay, Let's just call them what they are. They're AR glasses. They are effectively the exact same thing, bit thicker, a bit more bulky. They have two cameras either side, but they have a bit more hardware in the fact that you basically have a projector, for those people watching, a projector on the side here that displays light on like the side 10% of your right lens, basically. So it's kind of like an overlay. You know, this like liquid glass that Apple's going absolutely crazy for. Exact same thing. So I could walk along 95% of my vision is completely normal. And the bottom right corner, there's an overlay of, say, the apps, the notifications, my Spotify, all these types of things. It's a bit smarter. There's more functionality. And then the big thing apart from the lens, this display, this kind of going over the top of your everyday life, just in this little corner, is the wristbands, the Neuralink. So obviously, with more functionality and capabilities, you need more control. And we're not at the stage, like, this is one of the things I have to think about, is we're still half in, half out. We have screens and screen-based displays, but we're trying to go to voice command. What do you say? Like, go up, go down, go left. Like, that doesn't make sense at all.
On the tube, so kind people of got... looking at you like you're crazy.
Exactly. You kind of got this in between where you've got the screen-based display with applications and things you want to, like, go through and read, but you still need a way to go through that. So they basically developed this wristband neurocontrol. It's quite cool looking wristband, quite small, and that can detect motion. So you can flick your wrist up and down to go up and down, left and right. One of the cool things he did live demo, which was one of the ones that succeeded, was you can, like, pretend you've got a pen right on any surface and it can detect what words you're writing. And it worked pretty well. I was actually quite impressed by that. I've seen, like, a lot of work around wristband style kind of, like, connections and understanding, and this was seemed to be one of the most precise. The fact he could write words on, like, a not even on a surface, it was like in the air and stuff, was quite impressive.
Wait till you discover paper, Alec. You're going to be amazed. No, I'm kidding. Yeah, these, again, the tech is really impressive with these. Maybe just to talk about what, you know, I found striking. So this kind of side piece on the glass itself, on the actual lens, I guess this is akin to a heads-up display or a HUD, right? So if you're you know, familiar with gaming, again, not you, Alec, talking to the viewer at this point. This is kind of, it's like the additional information, the map, you know, the number of bullets you have left or whatever, in you know, charge you have on your laser gun, that kind of thing. It's the information you're displaying that is overlaid on your perspective of, you know, the in-game world, right? And they've basically replicated that in a really clever way on the lenses, such that they have a thing called a waveguide, right? Which is, so from, you know, if you're looking at me while I'm wearing the glasses, then all you can see is kind of these little kind of look like scratch marks, this waveguide. But these enable kind of the correct path of light to show up as an actual kind of screen element, like this is the AR part, right? So it's very impressive. And I saw, you know, people at MKBHD who reviewed these just this week, showing how little light leakage there is on these, which is so impressive. Like when they demoed the one previously, you can tell someone's, you know, looking at something on their screen, or that they've got something being displayed. Now it's a lot more subtle, right? So you do have this kind of one-way display overlaid on the view, which is super impressive. As you said, you also have to have this additional wristband now, which from a convenience point of view, I don't know if it, you know, is going to compete that well with a smartphone. I think it's very interesting, and the fact that it works so well is, you know, mind-boggling how they've managed to do that. I don't know if I'd be wearing one to use my glasses, if that makes sense.
I don't think that you're the target market. I think this is still that, like, prototype pioneer play, right? The fact they sold 2 million pairs of glasses, like, relatively expensive, $400, something like that, for the Ray-Ban smart glasses, which has very limited features, is crazy. And they're expecting to sell 10 million next year. Like, this actually has new features and new functionality. And I think it's more just a pioneer play to show the technology is possible. All the applications that were demoed were super basic, kind of like your default smartphone applications, like messaging, phoning, taking photos. But imagine some of the applications you can start to build on top of this. Like, maps is a great example, just like touring around, showing where you're navigating. Healthcare is a great example, like food trackers, meal. Like, I agree, this isn't going to change the absolute world in the next year or two. But I think, like, when the hardware gets cheaper, it gets more, like, more impressive, even though it is quite impressive right now. The cost comes down. Right now, they were saying it was like a grand or something like that. Oh, no, it's like $800, which actually is a lot less than I thought. But they were saying they're going to bring the price down substantially over the next couple of years. But the number of apps, new apps that weren't possible previously that you can build on top of this in the next few years, I think that's what excites me most. They had, I haven't actually mentioned this yet, they had James Cameron there, which I was like, mind blown away. Okay. He was advertising Avatar 3. I was like, what the hell's the connection here? obviously he was the kind of the genius that invented 3D cinematography. So he was like, I've been working with Meta, perfect partnership. He's used the HoloLens. He was saying, this is like groundbreaking. He was like, he obviously used the Oculus. He was like, that is how you're meant to see cinema. Like he said, it felt like his dream for cinema. And he was kind of talking about how impressed he was with the HoloLens and all these different devices. But yeah, impressive, pioneering, not going to change the world in the next couple of years, but really laying the foundation to change it in the next 5 to 10.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I think the most impressive thing about these is not any one of its capabilities or even the use cases. And I agree, there are lots of cool use cases. I think Maps is also probably the best one, and being able to like literally visually see the directions makes perfect sense. But yeah, it's not any single capability or anything. It's for me, it's the rate of progress is the impressive part, because especially you mentioned the price, right? Yeah, they're saying like the target price at like today is like $800, trying to bring that down to something more like $500 as soon as possible. But if you just look a year ago, I think the Orion, right, that is the precursor to this new device, they never even gave it a price because it was just a, you know, pure concept piece of hardware. And they rated, I think it was around $10,000 was the cost of materials. I think, yeah, that it's something around that mark. So it's like, you know, looking at an order of magnitude at least cheaper. It must be at least an order of magnitude cheaper to produce, which in 1 year is crazy. To produce something better for, you know, an order of magnitude cheaper is astonishing. That, you know, what used to be the company that helped us poke our friends on Facebook is now doing that is mind-boggling. But yeah, and then again, just my final point would be kind of, if you compare this to the Apple offerings, and we, you know, there's more to come for Meta, I guess, as well. But for me, this is very much something that is, it has a lot of the same use cases, to be honest, as like a Vision Pro. It has some of the interesting things you can use it for, except it's usable outdoors. Okay, it's something you can actually take out and you can blend into the real world. So it gives, it's like almost giving you the maximum capability you can currently get outdoors without looking like a bit of a prat, or, you know, being stopped by people everywhere you go. Whereas it's kind of, for me, relegating what Apple are doing with the Vision Pro to being an indoor only at home kind of luxury end device, which is a real category changer.
Well, that's a nice kind of inroad to the next topic as well. Like, it's the Oculus. Like, they still have Oculus. Like, I saw all the stats around Oculus just growing and growing and growing. Most of the people there were game developers that were pitching towards Oculus and 3D Worlds. And this was the thing that kind of surprised me. I actually forgot about the whole Horizon pitch. Like, I remember that was like a big thing, like Mark Zuckerberg floating through space and everyone taking the piss out of him, and like the Meta stock collapsing. No, well, not collapsing, like dropped 10% or something like that, because it's ridiculous. But there was a lot of builders there, and they were talking about the number of games and users they had on the Horizon engine in Oculus. And it was mind-boggling. I didn't realize quite how many people had an Oculus and quite how many users and games there were. So one of the stats they gave for this Golf Plus, which is like a VR simulator of normal golf, was they had 1.5 million downloads of just this one particular version. And he was comparing like the number of users they had versus golf the sport. And it was like comparable, and sometimes that like, there were more balls put and all this kind of stuff, which obviously there's reasons for that. But I found it so impressive to know that there was like this whole distinct community building in VR for very tailored use cases that I didn't know existed. Like, I wasn't aware this was such a success story. But the real announcements here on the Metaverse and the Horizon engine were, one, similar to smart glasses, it was performance-based. They improved the engine so you could have more concurrent users, more specs, better displays, all this kind of stuff. So it's all like software-based. But the other thing that I did find quite interesting, it's probably one of the reasons why there was a lot of game developers there, was this idea of promptable world building. So they showed some examples of, create me a dystopian future with lots of skeletons. You kind of saw these NPCs being generated real time, these environments being generated real time. And it wasn't like super crazy, like Witcher style or Skyrim style, like massive worlds, but it was impressive, the idea of like promptable 3D worlds. And it all fits into Mark Zuckerberg's overall goal of the Metaverse. And I kind of found it quite nice to see all these things fit together, and the nice that he hadn't given up on his dream, I guess.
Yeah, that's really, really cool. Actually, I didn't realize that was happening now, because that's something that I think in pretty much all of the times we've, you know, done gaming based episodes, you know, of the podcast, that's one that you and I have both been really excited about, is generative AI worlds, tasks, side quests, that kind of stuff, dialogue, all that kind of thing. So yeah, I had no idea that they're actually integrating that directly in Horizons. But as you say, there were no hardware updates here, so it's kind of a software and ecosystem only update, right?
Yeah, exactly. They were doing stats around like NPCs and having like AI based NPCs and being able to similar to the 3D world building with a single line of prompt, being able to create a character with a single line of prompt, create a backstory and have them just kind of completely be able to spitball pivot with dialogue. And they showed loads of crazy stats about how whenever you use one of these kind of AI based NPCs from a quick generation, it made users 40% more engaged and all these big stats. But it was really cool. Like the idea that in the same way anyone can spin up a simple app or a whole blog these days with LLM, you can just spin up a game, an environment, an NPC and a plot. And like they had a lot of indie game developers, which makes sense, right? The amount of money being like plowed into gaming right now, like it's such a huge industry, like bigger media than sports, than theater, than art all combined. Because there's so much money invested, so much like money being spent on the games, to be able to reduce the barrier to entry, like in the same way we've seen the reduction of the barrier to entry into technology, but for gaming, I think is a real powerful play, and I quite like it. I think it makes sense.
I'm shocked. Alec likes the gaming use cases of VR. I mean, it's your two favorite.
Alec's building his own game now.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. So that covers the kind of big announcements and kind of producty stuff. So should we just touch on kind of to finish then the bigger picture? What do we think about the whole thing? Like we've talked about a bit about contextual AI and the kind of ethos that you know entails. What was your kind of overall feeling about that and the pitch? Like how sold were you on that coming away from the event?
I think it makes sense. Like right now when we're looking at GPT versus Gemini versus Claude versus DeepSeek, it's all quite similar. They're obviously like all models that are increasing compute, increasing the way, like kind of improving the way in which they do things to make things more efficient, more intelligent. The improvements, I think, over time in ChatGPT, like 5 versus 4, aren't as impressive in my mind anyway as 2 versus 3. Some people are getting worried that he talks about this all the time. Like some people are getting worried that the rate of change is starting to plateau. I'm not really sure I believe that, but I think like rather than Meta plowing so much money into the exact same race, they're pitching slightly differently. And that is the idea of actually what matters is getting close to the end user, understanding as much, getting access to as much rich data about that user as possible, and not relying on super intelligence to be there. They call it the idea of contextual AI and personal super intelligence. And I think that is a really smart play. And I think like if you take that as one example, the fact they're building hardware that can eventually allow this contextual AI to support people in their daily lives, the perfect seamless UX. And then the other thing, which is like increasing the ability to build worlds, like all of this right now, I think is one giant play on like a crazy Ready Player One future, which I think would be epic. But it makes sense that was so far-fetched. You saw what happened when they announced like the Horizon engine, people weren't impressed. Pitching it to gamers right now and to like pioneers and hardware right now makes sense to make short-term returns and short-term gains. But the overall pitch, I think, makes a lot of sense as well. These incredible like virtual worlds that you can just plug into. It's big. I think I quite like it. What do you think about it all?
Yeah, I think maybe just on that last point, I think I'm less sold. I'm probably still where I was at the original Meta, you know, the name change from Facebook to Meta, that original pitch for Horizons. I think the technology is always impressive if they can get it to work at scale. You know, that's another open question. How do they, you know, manage the physical and compute limits at scale? How do they manage, you know, moderation, curation, all that kind of stuff at scale? Another big challenge. And for me, it's never been something I'm that excited about, right? Because I do get back to the, you know, I don't want to be plugged in all the time. And they kind of, you know, go if I really enjoyed those things and I really got hooked into Meta Horizons and things, then I'd worry about that. On the general principle of the kind of contextual AI stuff, I think it makes, you know, also a lot of sense, because I think that some of the most powerful cases where you can use AI is when you're getting kind of specific curated output and response that's hyper detailed and specific to you. And this is probably, you know, arguably the best way of doing it. It's the most curated data because it's literally your point of view. And the way I kind of thinking about this also is like, this is just another modality to multimodal AI in the sense that the mode we're now using, we've gone from text, image, video in all these models. And then they're essentially now providing POV live feed. Like that seems to be the, I don't know what to call it better than that, but that's kind of the new modality. So yeah, it makes sense. And I think has the probably, I get the feeling that it's probably got a lot more use cases than you can think of or anticipate. Like in the same way the iPhone, when they were like, here's the App Store and you can drink a, you can drink milk, you can drink fake milk or a beer. Right, that was the first use case. I do get the impression that people, there'll be so much that hasn't been even conceived of yet that will be useful with it.
That's, I'm glad you mentioned that point. That was a point I wanted to iterate as well, is that the reason you might not find this exciting is it's an infrastructure play. It's one part is hardware and one part is software. That doesn't really matter to 99% of users. Like what the users care about is what's possible on the end application, what you can do with it. And Meta was quite smart to not pitch towards that. That's why I say the audience was mostly builders, like mostly developers, because now they're opening up the APIs so that people can build what I think is going to be the next generation of applications on this infrastructure. One part for gaming and VR, the other part for the hardware related to smart glasses, contextual AI. That's the thing that I think excites me, is to think about the applications that can now be built on this new kind of, this new layer of technology. And yeah, in the same way, most people don't get excited about, you know, Jason Huang's NVIDIA announcements and all this kind of stuff. Actually, a lot of people do, but mostly because of the price go up. But most people don't get excited about that hardware. But I think builders and developers really do. And users will once they see the new applications that can be built on top of it. And that's not something I think Meta will pitch towards, right? Like applications are built by small, plucky, innovative, risk-taking, you know, companies and startups, especially in this AI age where the barrier to entry is so low. I think Meta is going to like stick and consolidate in the infrastructure game, which makes sense, and let lots of plucky developers build the applications that's going to get them billions of users.
Yeah, I think it's also a really, really smart play because you're essentially outsourcing the job of proving how valuable your hardware is to other people, right? To other people to come up with ideas, to build those ideas out. You are kind of outsourcing a lot of labor and creativity there, which is, I think, a very smart thing to do. And again, exactly what Apple have done really with the, you know, the App Store and inventing that really. Yeah, it just sounds like your event was, the event you went to was somewhere like slap bang between an Apple DevCon and an Apple flagship event. I kind of can't get a finger on exactly where it was. I think that the last thing I want to touch on then is rounding back to this idea of the breaking smartphone addiction, right? That being kind of the one of the ultimate goals of all this. Now, I don't want to say I don't buy it because that's a bit too kind of cynical, but I for sure know that Meta doesn't want you to stop using Facebook or WhatsApp or any of these other apps, right? They don't want you to stop doing stuff in their ecosystem. What they're doing is changing the interface to it. Now, great. I'd love to break smartphone addiction as much as possible. I think it's a very important thing to do. We all spend too much time on our smartphones. But I've got serious reservations having kind of watched the main keynote on the AR glasses. I can't get it out of my head that I think maybe it's worse to have a constant overlay, right, on your real life, because it's like saying, it's almost that thing that when you go on your phone, you're context switching, you're like diverting for a short period of time and you can't pay attention to something else. The problem being, now you're potentially opening the door to have a distraction permanently in your face, right? Can't just put it in the pocket. You can't get rid of it temporarily. It's just always going to be there. So yeah, I don't know if that's is opening a door to something worse, but yeah, what was your sense for it?
I see your point. I also, like, at the end of the day, Meta's a private company. What they care about is money. They see that maybe Facebook isn't as doing as well as it could be, but that's still probably the big cash cow, and they're working out how to pivot in the future. I agree that addiction will almost certainly shift from mobile devices to smart glasses. Like, Whether that's better or worse, I don't know. Maybe there is an argument to be said that you are engaging more, like rather than looking down at a phone, you're looking through something to a world. Like, does that mean it's 24/7 and constantly on? Potentially. Could it be more assistive rather than distractive? Also potentially. It depends how they deploy it. On the one hand, I see a future in which I am living my life and it's just supplementing and adding to that life. That's probably like the utopian future. On the other side, I can imagine a private company doing the Ready Player One style sell of the big bad corporate and having ads popping while I'm driving, being like, buy now, buy these chips, yeah, buy these exactly. things. And that is scary. But we're a way off that. I think right now it's exciting. I'm hopeful for the future. I'm not bombshell. I'm hopeful for the future.
Shock. Yeah. I mean, again, I think it's, I don't think this is something I'm leveling up Meta specifically, because Google obviously tried to do something similar with the Google Glass many years ago. I think this is a product category that lots of people have clamored for. People have said we should have these kind of things. You know, they've been in James Bond films, that kind of stuff. But I just wonder if when that product category arrives in its final form and it's, you know, completely accessible to users, is this the next iPhone, right? Or is this the next smartphone where we all go, oh my God, we've got smartphone addiction. Yeah, next it'll be, oh my God, I've got glass addiction. And what I'm thinking about is you speaking to another person and you just see, you see their eyes just kind of flicking to and from eye contact with you. That's the thing I'm kind of, I get the horrible dystopian Black Mirror feeling about. But yeah, let's see if we ever get there.
Yeah. And on that bombshell, thanks for listening to this episode. Let's see what the future holds for Mark's Meta, I guess, endeavor. Thanks for listening to wherever you may be. And join us next time to untangle a little more of Web3. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Untangling Web3.
Don't forget to send us your thoughts, questions, and comments on social media. And be sure to follow us on your favorite podcast provider to catch the next episode. See you next time to untangle a little bit more of Web3.
The views we express here are our own and do not reflect the views of our employers.